Welcome to Marvel Vision, a podcast all about the MCU, Marvel movies, Marvel TV shows, specifically Marvel TV shows, because we're going to be talking about the second episode ever of WandaVision, which just dropped on Disney Plus. I'm Alex.
I'm Justin.
I'm Pete.
And very exciting. Lots of stuff, again, to talk about. Requisite spoiler warning up front. We're not going to recap every moment of the episode. We're definitely going to get into it. We're going to get into predictions. We're going to get into Easter eggs. We're going to talk about some of our favorite moments in the episode. But before we do, I think the big thing that we need to talk about, because two episodes dropped on Disney Plus today. From now on out, Deuce, it's going to be one episode a week. But a lot of discussion in our first episode was focused on, how does that episode hold up by its own? How does it pair with the second one? Now that we've seen the second one, in particular, I'm curious to go to Pete, who was panicked, I think, about the first one.
He was a screaming lunatic, I think we can say. His hair was literally on fire. He couldn't deal, had to take a nap, and then woke up, and here we are.
Just fell down in the middle of the podcast. Yeah. If you listen to the podcast, there's a half-hour blank space where Pete was unconscious.
We had to get smelling salts and put him under his little nose.
That barely works over Zoom.
It was like an old-timey cowboy story. Wake up, Pete. It's time to talk about Marvel Vision.
Finally, we put a pie on the windowsill, and he just floated right up. That was the thing that worked.
Pie different or trope, different trope, cheeseburgers will work. Uh-huh. You know,
big old bucket of water in the face, and he was like, let's talk about Wanda.
How are you feeling after this one, Pete?
A lot better. I'm feeling a lot better. And I think that's obviously why they dropped two in the beginning, because that first one is rough, and the second one is a lot more digestible, not as stressful, even though there are kind of things happening for sure. It's just dealt with in a way that was a little bit easier on my heart and mind. But I would like to point out something I did notice right at the beginning. We're getting that famous Marvel logo showing all the action. And, you know what's up. Oh, you remember this when this happened? Oh, yeah. And this show is none of that, you know. So it is a little bit jarring for somebody who just knows the maybe movies and TV stuff to come in and just be like, where is the Wanda that I know and love?
But frankly, I think that's exciting. I think it's exciting that this is so different and able to still be super interesting, unique, while also being under the same banner. And because I think what that banner does at the top of the episode is it gives you that promise that, like, hey, trust us. We nailed all of these projects, so have a little confidence that we're going to get there with this one. And you're going to get to see.
Just calm down a little bit. And we'll get back to
exactly.
this.
Exactly, like a little.
Eventually, it'll get back to this.
Like a little sedative to put you at ease.
A couple of things, not to harp too much on the first 3 seconds of the episode too much, but I did want to talk about it here because I forgot to mention this in the previous podcast. I got so, I don't know, excited isn't the right word. Relieved, actually, might be closer, when the Marvel Studios fanfare came up at the beginning of the episode, because it has been so long since anything Marvel. We've gotten used to this cadence of 2-3 movies a year, things coming out regularly. It's been almost a solid year since we've seen anything. So to see something else coming up new, it felt good.
Exactly. I got so hyped, I took a bucket of water and put it on my face. And I was like,
I baked the whole pie and put it on the windowsill. An hour later, it was gone.
I took some smelly salts and poured it right in my mouth because I was like, what am I doing with this stuff? I'm so excited.
The other thing, though, and these are two little caveats, and I love this episode. I thought this was a fantastic episode. But two things that I thought were not bad choices, but weird choices. One, I loved it. Still talking about the logo here. I loved in the first episode how it changed into sort of a classic TV logo. Yes. I was expecting that again this episode, and that didn't really happen, which was strange. The other thing is the previously on is a weird choice here in terms of how they execute it, because it doesn't feel stylistically consistent with the rest of the episode. I think it's probably going to become much more important as we go on in this series, which is why they set it up here. But right now, it's like, I don't need to remember most of this.
Well, here's what I think. I think you do need to remember most of it. And I also think it was sort of recreating the tone, because they don't want to have to keep sort of slow walking us into the tone of the show every episode. And I think to both of your points, like the logo changed into the black and white television intro in the first episode. And this episode, it's almost like reminding us what's up, giving us a little sense of the tension, dread, and classic look of everything. And then it's almost like a hard transition into this, into the new episode. And I think that serves a dual purpose in that we saw it's a different sitcom this time. So it's almost like the characters are also changing channels, changing eras a little bit into this new episode. And I think that's important.
I disagree, Justin. I think what Alex is saying is right. Somebody dropped the ball and someone needs to be fired because it was a sweet transition, really helped us. The second one, they left us high and dry. I was like, what the fuck's going on? You need to kind of give us the, you know, because it goes in this fun animated thing, maybe do a little bit of that with the logo. You know, we're really
I love the idea
this
that Kevin
fun.
Feige didn't watch This Is All until he's like Friday morning, Disney Plus. Wakes up nice and early, gets himself a cup of coffee, is about to sip it, sees the intro, is like, what the fuck?
Yeah, spits it on his brand
new computer.
Somebody's
getting fired. What the? And he's like, give me Tanya on the phone. She's fired. well, because the two camps here, just to be clear, is me saying, pat on the back, that was a cool choice, and Pete saying, someone's head has to roll for this obvious mistake. So you be the judge,
Alex
listener.
Alex said it first.
Yeah,
it was
definitely me first, and Pete was just backing me up.
That's right. I'm supporting this choice.
Great. I think we've pretty much covered everything in the episode.
Yes. We've covered not a second of dialogue. So
I'm going to give like a broad strokes about the plot. We did this last time.
Right, you want to move forward? Okay. All right. Well, I have more things to say, but okay.
Right, hold on. We can get back to the logo for our middle chunk of the podcast where we do logo revisited.
Yeah, logo, okay, go, our favorite section. Here we go. Let's go back and talk about the logo.
Like the first episode, this is a very typical sitcom plot, and I think I was a little too dismissive about the first episode being a premise pilot. Because what's really driven home here is the idea of this show is twofold. Obviously, whatever going on outside in the world, whatever's happening with Scarlet Witch and Vision in the quote-unquote real world. But the premise of the show is they move to a small town and they're trying to hide their magic powers, which is a very classic sitcom premise. And I got that in the first episode, but I think that's driven home in a really good way thematically, in a modern thematic way as well in this episode, which I thought was really cool. So we get mostly they're trying to prepare for the town talent show. At the same time, they're hearing some weird noises outside. So Vision joins the community watch program.
Neighborhood watch.
Gets accidentally drunk on some gum, which very classic sitcom premise for a robot, I guess. And they go to the talent show, think they're messing it up because they're showing off their magic powers, but turns out they actually win the talent show. And so that's the sitcom of the show. The other thing that I thought was really fascinating stylistically, because you compare this to the previous episode, is the performances, because they've evolved as well. Scarlet Witch is now more sarcastic 60s. Everything's a little looser. It's a little sexier. We see more different races in here as well, which is something that you wouldn't necessarily see in the 50s. So I thought it was neat to see that evolving take on the sitcom in episode two.
Well, I think that all of this, there's just so much in every choice in this show. To your point about, yes, it's just a slow, natural progression from the 50s to the 60s. Typified, I think, by at the beginning, we see the beds separate. And then in that opening sequence, the beds get pushed together, which is a big landmark choice in, I think, I Love Lucy. And it was a legit controversy back in the day when they pushed the beds together. Which is crazy to think that back in the day, it's not like people in the 50s slept in separate beds. Everyone always slept in one bed. It's just on television, they couldn't insinuate that people might touch each other at night. So they slept in two child beds.
I would like to point out something that Delvin said, though, is that, you know, it's very hurtful. I felt like the lady in the horse costume in this episode because, like, I've been to talent shows and worked really hard and not only my outfit, but my routine, gotten it all down. And then someone shows up, stumbles through it. Everybody loves them and they win. And it is fucking heartbreaking to sit there holding your horse head in your hand, you know, just emotionally drained from what you've put in for months and months of time. And somebody just stumbles their way through and just kills it.
Pete, imagine how I feel as the horse ass standing right behind you, being the butt, still coming in second place in over 100 talent shows that we've entered.
I just want to give a little bit of clarity to what we're talking about here. Back when we were allowed to meet in person, Justin, Pete, and I used to do a horse centipede act. There was a lot of
fun. Don't make this creepy, you asshole. Yeah.
Pete was the head.
I was the middle.
I like the idea that this horse centipede act with three people is one head and two butts, and you and I were butts, and Pete was the head. No second head.
What were we talking about? WandaVision,
well, here, I
right?
have a point to make. Yes. You said that the premise of the show is about them hiding their magic powers. And I think that is sort of one of the central tensions of the show, because they're not hiding their identities. Their identities mm-hmm. are, they're called Vision, they're called Scarlet Witch. Like, it's a whole, that's real. But they have to hide the instances of their superpowers that, when they're using them. And I think that points to a lot of facts that we have yet to uncover on this show, in that they are in control of this environment. And the only reason they can't use their magic powers is because it breaks the sitcom format, mm-hmm. if that makes sense. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
They can't be superpowers.
And again, this is something that doesn't make sense to us, but because you are a line producer and have worked in television for so many years, this is your kind of like second cunning. Like, you understand how sitcoms work.
Well,
and
actually,
structure
let's
and
take a step back there. As a line producer, so what is that? You make sure that everything lines up properly?
Yes.
Is that
exactly?
Well, no, it's lined in frame. It's like you're producing everything that's mm-hmm. in frame. I think that's how.
Yeah,
or
I make
are
sure.
you a lion producer?
Yeah, I mostly make sure that the lions have the right amount of meat so no one gets...
and that's the lion that roars at the beginning before the movie starts?
Shout out
that...
to Siegfried, who died
this
week.
God, oh, that's rough, man. That why would you do that?
Let's talk... we're going wild today already. let's talk about some specific things in the episode that jump out to you. Plot points you liked, moments that you thought were interesting or fun. Without getting too much into speculation, let's talk just... raw about the episode, what were sequences you're interested in?
Like the stage.
Well, I mean, I'll mention, like, I thought the animated sequences, both in the title sequence and in Vision's stomach, were very fun and perfectly done.
Now, to me, that said, Jetsons. How about you guys? What was your feeling on the animated?
Bewitched.
Yeah, Bewitched.
Ooh, okay.
Bewitched,
okay.
I think, is the main touchstone, and I Love Lucy with some of the stuff. So they're moving forward in time through sitcoms. One other observation there about the opening credit bit, the animated thing. They're the only two characters introduced, despite the mm-hmm. fact that there are a ton of other recurring characters here. We talked about Deborah Jo Rupp from last episode, the ultimate sitcom mom.
Dottie's in this one.
Dottie. We see, she's new in this episode, I think, but we do see the mustachioed guy and all the other supporting characters. But we're only introduced in the title sequence to Wanda and Vision, making me think that they're the only real people and everyone else is a construct of some sort.
Interesting. I mean, that's definitely getting into
Agnes isn't real.
Let's talk about Agnes. Catherine Hahn continues to be great this episode. So funny.
Oh, how do people do this sober? Oh, what a line.
I love that she gets to move forward through the decades. Now she is the boozy housewife, the one that's constantly getting drunk and wasted. Very, like, classic sitcom trope there. Her delivery on the lines are good. I love her exchange with Dennis the mailman, where she's looking
my God,
back and shooting
She looks back, checks
check
him out.
Very funny. The line about... her husband Ralph being the assistant and making him disappear, also very funny. And all the stuff with Senor Scratch, the buddy, was very funny
the
as well.
Stuff.
To get into like the theorizing part about it, I think there are a couple of interesting things here. This potential spoilers, I guess. We talked about this in the first episode, but a lot of focus was on maybe her being some variation on the character Agatha Harkness from the comic books. We get a couple of clues here. Maybe I'm looking into it too much, but Senor Scratch, in the comic books, Agatha Harkness's son is Nick Scratch, not the character on Sabrina.
Whoa!
Don't nobody freak out.
Ah!
We don't have a bad boy alert here or anything.
We're very close to a bad boy.
About to hit the light.
But her son is named Nick Scratch, and I looked this up. She has a husband that we never see. We never find out who Nick Scratch's father is. So that seems to be at least...
Dave Scratch.
Yeah, they're playing with that here, I think. The other thing, which is a way bigger clue, is over the animated opening credits, as we see Wanda in the supermarket, there's two signs in the background. One of them is for, I believe, Auntie A's cereal, so Aunt Agatha's cereal. And there's something about like it being magically delicious or whatever. It's not exactly that. But then the other one is
Charms.
Bova brand milk. And again, this is going to get to the comics, but Agatha Harkness, at least for a little while, lives in this town that I'm blanking on the name of. I'm sorry, I'm a bad comic book fan.
Are you talking about Wundagore Mountain?
Yes, Wundagore Mountain, which is run by the High Evolutionary. And there's a bunch of animal people there, including Bova, a cow woman, who also helps take care of Pietro and Wanda, and I believe their kids later on as well.
Yeah.
So whether it turns
Deep
out to be that
dive.
Or not, there's definitely like... They're tipping the hand, and this gets into a bigger thing. I know I'm monologuing at this point, but this is the big thing that I took away from the episode.
Go on, King.
That I really... liked about this, what I was mentioning earlier, that it worked thematically in terms of a modern context as well, is the whole point of the episode is they're doing this magic act where Wanda is saying, no, you got to show them. You got to show them what the magic is. You got to show them that it's not real and what's really happening. And that's exactly what we get this episode. They're not playing coy about it. That, you know, we don't know what's happening, but we know this isn't real. We know there's a problem. We know there's an outside world, and we know eventually it's going to have to be solved in some way. And I think that was a subtle way of weaving that in the episode, making it work for a 60s sitcom premise, but also making it work for a modern TV show.
Yeah, it's so smart. On the Agnes tip, I feel like she in the first episode and in this episode, it feels like she's sort of keeping the fantasy alive.
Mm-hmm.
She's aiding and almost teaching Scarlet Witch on how to live, keep the sitcom trope going, and to live within it so that she can be happy with Vision. And on the other side of that, Vision keeps pressing against the reality. He keeps, logic keeps trying to overwrite, and then the sitcom world keeps gumming him up or somehow reshifting him back into the sitcom thing. And I think that may be the essential tension and what each character sort of going through in this series.
I mean, a couple of things that point to that, I think, pretty clearly. Vision is dead, so something is going on there where he... I imagine if he suddenly realized that he died, he just, you know, poof into a puff of smoke or something like that. But on the Agnes side of things, I think it's her first line of the episode is she walks up to Wanda and says, there she is, the star of the show, which is like, she knows what's going on. Like, she's aware. If nobody else is aware, at least Agnes is aware.
I think you're right. And there's also a line that I think Wanda has, this is our home now, which I think also enforces, like, I'm going to keep this going for as long as I can so that we can be happy.
I love Elizabeth Olsen's performance in this episode in particular. She goes through so many different ranges, and we got a sense of this in the scene of the last episode where the stop it scene where she broke a little bit and we saw real Wanda, not sitcom Wanda. Here she gets to play that throughout, and it's still very unclear to me. I still kind of, not 100%, but pretty firmly stand by the idea that she's the one keeping this going. Like, she might not be the villain of the show necessarily, but she definitely doesn't want to leave the sitcom world as strongly as maybe she should. And you get that through the performance, particularly at the scene at the end towards in the gazebo, where she wants to tell Vision something weird is happening. And there's clearly a level of her that realizes this is wrong, but she doesn't want to change it.
Yeah, I agree. The performance is so strong. You can see her, there's a subtle panic all the time and sort of a wide-eyed, like, sadness, I think, that is permeating this. And this is, like, a sort of speculation for later on, but I think they're living their moments, the moments of a life, very quickly. Last episode, they got married. This episode, at the end, there's the reveal that she's pregnant. Right. I think my theory from last time is that these are, like, this may be, like, the very moments when Vision's dying, or like if this is all happening in a split second, then she's trying to live out the life that she wished she could have had with Vision as fast as possible.
Well, I think, go ahead, Pete.
I was just going to say, we're talking a lot about Wanda, you know, her acting, but man, Vision in this, the way Vision was like drunk and like talking to the audience was really hilarious. Like, your dumb little faces, he says at one point. I'm feeling pukey. Like, he had so many great lines. I know it was, like, sitcom fun, but, like, the fact that he is – Paul Rini is playing a robot and then someone – a robot that's kind of drunk. It's just really fun to kind of see all this happening at once. It's really impressive.
He's great. I know I was in the tag for him in the last episode, but seeing his drunk dad – routine this episode was really fun. Just his stammering Brit, just really funny. And I even like the line at the end after he takes out the gum. He's like, oh, I'm not that funny without this, and then throwing it behind him. Just a fun little moment in the middle of all this weirdness, particularly at that point, I thought was really good. I did want to
Also, I just wanted to say, like, as far as really great performances, Mustache Man killed it when, like, she turns that he was like, that was my grandmother's piano. Oh, my God.
Well, those things, we talked about the computational systems thing from the last episode, which works for the weirdness of the world, but also works as a very typical sitcom joke. I love those things that way. Also the line about, wait, is that how mirrors work? Which are exactly what people would say in sitcoms like that, as magic is happening around them. But also, these are clearly real people, or maybe pretend people, who are trapped in something, who are trying to figure it out as well.
Speaking of that, speaking of real people, there was a moment at Dottie's kind of thing where we kind of got introduced to a new character who also, she seemed like she wasn't aware of what's going on or how she got there or even her name when she's introduced to Wanda.
Yeah, she breaks the format.
It seems like that maybe this character is also having kind of a Wanda experience where she's kind of trapped in there as well.
Yeah.
So it might not all be like Wanda's doing. It might be like this could be a place where they've trapped people, different heroes.
I think I have a theory about that I want to get to in a second, but that's Teyonah Parris. People might know her from Mad Men, which I think she was channeling probably at least a little bit here.
I loved that. I love her as a guest star.
Yeah, Teyonah she's really Parris. Good. Here, I'll throw out a theory, and this is based on kind of knowing a little bit about who she is and what she's playing. So really...
Oh, I thought it was based on the fact that, you know, you've watched ahead or...
No, it's not. I mean, they've revealed casting for other movies and things, and we talked about it the previous episode. Again, this is probably a spoiler, so if you don't want to know, turn away. But she is Monica Rambeau. She's the grown-up Monica Rambeau. She comes from the comics. She's going to show up in Captain Marvel 2. I think there's a connection between the red helicopter that drops that has the sword symbol on it again and her showing up. My theory is that that helicopter brought her in somehow, got enveloped in the sitcom world, and she is trying to figure out what's going on with Scarlet Witch and Vision in a very direct way versus the voices outside who we hear this episode saying, Wanda, who's doing this to you? She's in there and really trying to free them, because a lot of her dialogue seems to be kind of nudging them a little bit to be like, hey, that's a weird thing, right? Oh, that's weird. Do you remember this thing? And kind of tickling them a little bit. I don't know if you guys have the same
impression. But
also the helicopter was Iron Man colors.
True. Yeah, maybe. I mean, I think that's more, it's also Vision colors, right? Because you got the Vision red and yellow and everything else.
And that makes me think maybe that the Scarlet Witch has created some sort of pocket dimension that she was able to penetrate. Maybe it's like a little bubble or something. And anything that goes into it becomes part of the fantasy.
While we're just going wild on speculation and spoilers, I do want to talk about two other things in the episode that I thought were interesting. One of them is pretty obvious, but when you're talking about thematic stuff, the benefit from the talent show is for the children. And they keep saying this is all for the children, which again, in terms of like thematically tipping their hand and saying, we're going to tell you what this show is actually about. It's clear when Wanda is pregnant by the end, whoever is doing this, whatever is happening here, it is all about these kids who, of course, are very important to the comics. And we know that. But that seems to be the plot of the show as well.
And as people who have kids, like that's how it worked, right? You guys just started talking about kids and then kids showed up, right?
I mean, technically, yes. There's one other step in there that I don't want to tell you about, Pete. But
that's for our real spoiler podcast.
Yeah, real. We do a podcast where we talk about real life spoilers.
The other thing that I wanted to throw out to you guys, and I don't know, I'm very iffy on this theory, but I do think there's some evidence for this. In terms of who is behind this, we have that very terrifying moment at the end when they go outside to the street and they see a guy come up through the street, through the manhole.
The beekeeper.
Yeah.
And what's interesting about this, guys, and I don't know if you know this at all, but bees don't usually live in the sewers. So the fact that a beekeeper came out of the sewers, it doesn't make a lot of sense.
Well, what about the famous cartoon and comic book Teenage Mutant Ninja Bees? They live in the sewers.
Teenage Mutant Ninja Bees. Teenage Mutant Ninja Bees. Bees
heroes who make honey.
Confusing.
Heroes who make money or make honey.
Oh. Make honey. No, that's much better. Thank you. The thing that I wanted to mention about the beekeeper, this is my theory that I'm kind of iffy about, is based on that and one other thing that I'll mention in a second, what if AIM is behind this? AIM is an organization for the comics. They're scientists who regularly muck with everybody. There are constantly jokes about their uniforms and how they're wearing these beekeeper helmets. The other additional thing that I'll throw in there, this design was at the end of the first episode as well, before they cut to the TV. And then at the end here, Wanda and Vision are trapped in this hexagon, which is a honeycomb design. So there's something there that I think indicates, to take it wildly far afield, also adding in the commercial with Strucker and knowing Wanda and Vision and Pietro's history with Hydra, there could be something. We know Hydra is dead in the MCU. We know S.H.I.E.L.D. is dead. What if it is these two offshoots? AIM has somehow captured them, a science offshoot of Hydra. And S.W.O.R.D. is this offshoot of S.H.I.E.L.D. that's dealing with interdimensional incursions or something. And they're basically battling for Scarlet Witch and Vision.
That's what I was thinking. And so the influence is coming from both sides. We have Monica Rambeau coming in to try to pull them back on the heroic side. I think that's what the radio is, probably a good guy voice. And I think the Hydra AIM influence is what's for trying to get the children. They want a creation out of this using their powers that they can control.
Because when I saw the beekeeper, I thought like, oh, maybe like this world that she's creating is like sucking real people in. But when the beekeeper turned and looked angrily, it seemed like it was some tude on there. And I thought, okay, this isn't just a regular person kind of trapped in here.
And for those of you listening,
it might also be that the bees are an illusion.
Tude is a comic book shortening of the word attitude.
Yes. Oh, thank you for specifying. Appreciate that, Justin. I mean, it's possible that he might have been changed by this reality bubble or something like that. So he might not look like that at all. We might be just piecing together things that don't actually piece together. But it's definitely a weird moment and worth mentioning. Two other things that I wanted to mention. One of them, Emma Caulfield, Anya from Buffy the Vampire Slayer, plays Dottie, which I thought was a fun little bit of casting, and I think she nailed that perfectly. And the second thing, this is more of like an advanced thing that I do not think is going to happen here, but I only mention this because this news just recently came out with the MCU, not confirmed by Disney, but apparently Chris Evans might be coming back for something as Steve Rogers. They've also indicated that there's some sort of cameo that we're not expecting. Is there any possibility that we could see like Steve Rogers or one of the Avengers or somebody like that pop up in this fantasy world towards the
end? Well, the thing was like after the radio, Wanda was like, that is strange. Mm-hmm. And I was like, ooh, I wonder if that was like Doctor Strange on the radio or something, just because the way she said that was trying to, I think, draw a little attention to it.
This is a total stray observation as well, but I did think the boss from last episode had Doctor Strange facial hair. So I thought, I agree with you. Doctor Strange is a likely candidate of someone trying to get in there and influence this.
Before we start to wrap up here, there's obviously a lot more that we could talk about in the episode, but any other moments that jumped out to you that you wanted to mention?
Well, obviously the helicopter coming in, very, very Pleasantville, if you remember that movie, I thought. And that informs, I think, the moment at the end when they go into full color. Which I think if our theory that that Scarlet Witch is the person who's guiding this and trying to keep them in the sitcom world, why would they then go to color? And my thought was that it is the influence, seeing that helicopter, in same as the movie Pleasantville, Scarlet Witch then has to make that make sense. So she pushes the whole world into color.
Yeah, I thought it was almost like a protective move, like after seeing the creepy beekeeper, then rewinding it and kind of being like, no, she kind of like the bubble got stronger, like she colored it and tried to like kind of almost like turn it up a little bit. Because
I like that idea of the bubble getting stronger. I think that's an interesting one. I think also just on a logistical level, it's something that lets us again, you know, pull back the curtain a little bit on the whole magic trick they're doing with the show versus between episode one and episode two, where it just went from 50s to 60s. Now we see it go from 60s to 70s, presumably here at the end of the episode.
Some things that you had mentioned that I wanted to kind of talk about. What's interesting about this commercial parody that is run in both episodes, it's the same two people in them, which adds a nice creepy factor. And this Strucker will make time for you. Like that was a crazy message as it was showing that watch.
Yeah. I mean, Strucker is dead and there was some Strucker stuff that I'm only vaguely remembering from Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. that I do not think they're going to refer to at all, but it is possible that we might get some sort of Strucker Jr. or Strucker the Third leading up an AIM or a Hydra or something like that is behind this, potentially.
Yeah, I think.
Also, I did want to talk about when Vision went to the kind of neighborhood watch, the fact that, like, their top secret stuff was gossip was really funny. And that whole, like, thing of, like, norms of communists and everybody falls out.
Yeah.
That was really just kind of fun to see Vision trying to fit in, mm-hmm. and the choices that, like, the robot would make was really, oh, I don't eat food, you know, like, just fun.
That also seemed like the mastication joke, which I thought was, like, sort of sitcom format breaking for that era, but, like, super funny.
Yeah.
All good stuff. Oh, you wanted to mention something else, Justin?
Yes. Talking about the commercials makes me think another random theory. What if the commercials are sort of, if this is a Scarlet Witch constructed little pocket universe or whatever, bubble, maybe that's what she's putting out. She's blaming Strucker or blaming, like, that's the sort of outward signal she's giving back to people. Like, this isn't me doing this. This is, go chase these villains, like red herrings for the whoever's coming after them to go deal with.
I do get worried about those two folks in the commercials because they seem very separate from everybody else. You know, at least everybody else gets to interact in this real world. It's clear whether they're real or not, like Dottie breaking at that point and saying, who are you? What's going on? There seems to be an understanding of at least we are here with each other trapped in this thing. Wherever those commercial people are, they're all on their own. I'm very scared.
It also seems like after like an incident, the person, it's almost like a Men in Black mind wipe. They're always like, oh, hey, okay, now I'm back to normal. So,
Alex, do you feel that way when you see regular commercials? Where you're like, oh, God, those
I'm
poor
terrified.
People.
Yeah, whatever.
Oh, no, Matthew McConaughey's driving that car somewhere all by himself.
Oh, so scary.
I'm scared for him.
I hope he's all right.
Ah, good.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm really sorry.
Never apologize for a strong,
make him apologize. Fuck that.
Before we wrap up here, you have two small things.
All right. I love when Wanda reveals that she's pregnant at the end and says, is this really happening? Mm-hmm. I really like that because it feels like she's giving away the game a little bit to Vision. She's like, I want this to be happening. Mm-hmm. You want this to be happening, ostensibly. Let's agree that this is happening now so that we can enjoy it. I thought that was a real nice, subtle explanation moment.
And, we touched on this earlier in the podcast, but I think that also raises a lot of questions about what's going on with Vision because he died, you know, and the fact that he is assuring
Stop
her.
Stop saying that. You're really breaking my heart.
But the fact that he's saying.
Live in this little bubble that Wanda created.
It is hard to have a baby with a corpse. It is like very, very hard. So
Alex is trying to trust
you. Why did you say that?
The main takeaway is that I'm proud of them.
What I think Alex means is, in the same way that your phone dies, that's the way the Vision died. So do you have a little funeral every time your phone dies, Pete? Or do you just recharge it and move on?
No, I have a little funeral every time,
crying, my phone's dead, help.
I have some people say some nice things, you know.
And meanwhile,
drop some roses on top.
All right. Rose petals. When Alex's phone dies, he tries to make a baby with it. Last observation. Last observation.
All you need is one.
Sort of overarchingly, the way that this the show is moving forward in time through television, but in the same way, in reality, television became more and more of a way of became more and more real in the way that it showed reality. Mm-hmm. In the 50s, like, it was super fake. People weren't allowed to sleep in the same beds, all that. And then it slowly became, now TV today is like, you can do anything you want. It's the same as reality. And I think that's a nice parallel that they're using to show as the series moves forward, everything's going to become more and more closer to reality, the reality for Vision and Scarlet Witch.
Now, Justin, I hate to be the one to tell you this. I feel like you should know better, but you can't do anything in television. It's run by ratings and views. So you can't just show a flower pot and then have someone shit on it and be like, this is my television.
Not to disagree with you, Pete. You've been backing me up a lot this episode. But if you ever watch the classic show, You Can't Do That on Television, they did a lot on television.
And it was, yeah, right.
Yeah,
that's the real twist there, is it was already on television.
Mm-hmm.
And I will say that my sitcom that I've been pitching, featuring mm-hmm. a flower pot getting shit on over and over, is going well.
Oh, well, I'm sorry. Congratulations.
That's great. Before we wrap up here, here's what we're going to try as a wrap up for the show. What is on your vision board? Ooh. What are you predicting? What are you expecting? What do you want to see in the next week's episode? Justin, you want to take that one first?
Sure. So we're moving into, I guess, late 60s, 70s television. Is that going to be like sort of a T.J. Hooker? Like we're getting into some more action stuff, which that yeah. seems very exciting to me. And I think in the trailer, we've seen definitely some more action. I'm excited about that. The evolution of Catherine Hahn's character, she almost feels like she's...
Well, how many people are you taking here? It's supposed to be one.
He said predictions.
Person.
It's my vision board.
Vision board isn't like one picture you put up there and like, this is the house I want. It's a picture of the house. It's more, you know, colors and splashes.
Exactly. I'm looking forward to The Color Purple. Coming.
The movie? Nice.
Just because PJ, we'll get there.
Okay,
Pete, Oprah is just great in it.
Just because your personal vision board is just a picture of Wolverine, Hugh Jackman, doesn't mean that everyone else has to be that simple.
That's not true. It's not.
Well, Pete, why don't we go over your vision board? What's on your vision board for next week's episode?
Okay, it's a lot of oranges, mm-hmm. some yellows.
Sure. Very okay. warm.
Yeah, red. You know, which I feel like meets the theme of the show. I'm very excited what Justin said. It kind of crushed my vision board because I would love to see some like Magnum PI type of stuff where like Vision sliding
classic
across
sitcom.
The
roof
of a car, you know what I mean? Stuff like that mm-hmm. where they're solving crimes together. You know, that would be a lot of fun. But no, I just think that like I'm really impressed with how they went from episode one to episode two. I feel like they really did a good job of like, you know, being like, it's going to be okay. Stop freaking out and like relaxed into a more palpable kind of like a show. So I'm very excited about it, kind of where it's flowing into from here. But I really feel like the kind of side characters, I'm very excited about to see how they're going to add to it. And Mustachio all the way.
I mean, that segues nicely into what's on my vision board. The thing that I'm really excited about beyond the main plot, I want to find more about Teyonna Parris's character. She's really fascinating. Like we talked about, really an interesting addition to the cast that throws things a little off kilter. So excited to see more of her in episode three, as well as the side characters. I'm always a big fan in comedies of the more they could flesh out the world of the show with random side characters coming back again and again and again. It just makes the overall show stronger. So even though we're focusing on the mysteries, we're focusing on the superpowers, the comic book Easter eggs of it all, if they can continue to make it work as a sitcom, that's very exciting to me.
100%.
All right, and that is it. Thank you, everybody, for tuning in. As mentioned, the show is going to go weekly from here on out, so we'll have one episode going up a week. That said, if you want to support us, patreon.com/comicbookclub. Also, we do a live show every Tuesday night at 7 p.m. to Crowdcast and YouTube. Coming out, we would love to chat with you about WandaVision on YouTube. Comic Book Club, you can subscribe right there at Comic Book Live on Twitter. iTunes, Android, Spotify, Stitcher, or the app of your choice to subscribe and listen to the show. ComicBookClubLive.com for this podcast and many more. Until next time, don't lose your marvels. Still trying stuff out.